Aaron. You don't need, Aaron doesn't need a second name. He's that famous. Aaron from the Holmes Report.
Wow.
Talking about the industry from Praxis.
Yeah, so, we're here in Hyderabad at Praxis, which is fun. Big conference, and great to see you here, Alex. You're obviously a veteran of the global PR industry caravan. I've seen you at many events around the world.
What can I say? They roll me out.
They do,
Yeah. Sort of take off the dust, give me a brush off. They put me on stage and I just talk and waffle and say whatever I want.
And then you go back into mothballs.
And yeah, and then they put me back in storage. But enough about me being in storage. I wanted to talk to you, Aaron, about the state of the industry. It's a big one.
Yeah.
And the Holmes Report is, you know, it is essentially the standard by which, you know, we view the industry. You know, you've got your own state of the industry, which you put out in conjunction with others. Where are we at in the moment in terms of the industry's development, and where do we need to be headed?
It's a really big question. Not least because there's so many things to consider when people ask, you know, where is the industry at, and then you also have the complications, as you know well. In terms of regions and markets and industry sectors and disciplines, and everyone's at different places. But I think broadly speaking, you can say that the PR industry has some opportunities to capitalize on the way that earned media has become so central to everything. But unfortunately, the PR industry also has several challenges it has to overcome in terms of investment, in terms of its appetite for risk, in terms of the agency model, I think, as well. And I think if I was to give you a really glib diagnosis, which is not like me at all.
Go for it. Go on.
I would say that the industry is still progressing a little too slowly, I think, in general. And I think, you know, that's a really broad generalization, but I think any market you go to, you can make that observation. And obviously, there are some agencies that are doing really well, but for the most part, I think there isn't enough innovation.
Mm. Well, with that, let's look at the positives.
Okay.
Who's doing it right, and what can we learn from them?
I'm not sure I really want to call out too many, because then, you know, I'll have other people asking me why I'm not
mentioning
this. Why you're
not mentioning
this?
Exactly. Generalization.
Yeah, so I mean, the ones who are doing it right, I think are, okay, so this is what I will say to you. I wrote a column earlier this year, and it was called The Rise of the Midsize.
Okay.
And one of the things that we have noticed over the last few years is that the firms that are doing well tend to be, there's a bit of ambient noise.
Well, we are on site, you know, we're doing it.
We're on site, there's a vacuum cleaner, and this is the developing world, so you have to, as you know, you've got to put up with a few things. The firms that are doing really well are, first of all, they're often independent, and secondly, they're often mid-size. Now, being independent really helps because it means they can invest ahead of the curve. They don't have to worry about returning profit to shareholders on a quarterly basis. I'm not sure that's the best way to run an agency. I think agencies should be run for the benefit of clients and employees, not pension funds, who may own a stake in their parent groups. And the advantage of being mid-size means they can focus on certain areas, they can bring a level of agility to the equation, and also they often bring superior client service. And they're not just rolling out the senior people for the pitch, and then the account team is completely different, and that tends to annoy clients. So those two trends have been really clear to us for a few years. And what those types of firms are also doing, when we talk about investment, you know, what are they investing in ahead of the curve? They're investing in new types of talent. They're often investing in things like digital. Maybe they're investing in becoming better at creativity and in analytics. So they're looking to capitalize on all of the opportunities that public relations has, rather than responding too late to the threats that face public relations.
And we're also on site at Praxis.
Yeah.
Incredible event. 600 plus people, or comms people, and I'm amazed that they are so quiet during presentations.
And yeah, and panels. It's a Saturday as well, right?
And it's a Saturday
it's
as well.
Almost like they have nothing better to do.
Well, maybe we should just ring up some of the clients and say, you know, your people are not delivering today. You need to send them more briefs.
Sure, we can manufacture a crisis.
Yeah, we could do. That'd be very easy. Especially given social media and also traditional media in India.
Yeah.
But also with IBC, the part of the world I am in the Middle East, that's also very much still seen as an emerging market. So what is happening in these regions, and how is that then impacting the PR of the comms function?
It can be region specific. So if I talk about East Asia, for example, what I'm seeing in places like China and Southeast Asia is a certain amount of leapfrogging, in that public relations is kind of moving to mobile very quickly, and it's getting very clever about connecting content to commerce in a way that I don't see in the Western markets and the more mature markets. Now, in places like Middle East, maybe Africa and so on, I think you're not seeing that so much necessarily. But what you are seeing and what they are bringing, I think, is this requirement for cultural intelligence and this reminder that great PR is really local and is really hyper-local. And this idea that you can have this global one-size-fits-all model and you can have an American company, you know, coming in with its messaging determined from whatever the city might be. I'm not going to mention any particular Midwestern cities in the great state of Ohio. But
no, you don't need to.
But coming in with a one-size-fits-all message, and I think, you know, to be fair, many American companies know this really well now, and they are decentralizing their storytelling to take into account the fact that you need that cultural intelligence, and you need to understand people on a local basis, and you need to listen more than you talk. And I think that's what many of these emerging markets are teaching us and reminding us.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Aaron.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure to have you.
Can I turn the tables on you? Are we going to talk about your war with MEPRA?
You can talk about anything you want, you know. Everything's on the table.
Okay. Well, I can't really ask you too much, I feel, because then, you know, I need to give MEPRA the right of reply.
Of course.
So, I've just noticed on social media you've written a column questioning certain aspects of MEPRA's governance. They've written a very robust response to your column. Are you planning another response to their response?
Look, I've stated my position.
Okay.
I think, I don't think it'll be that constructive to continue their position. It's pretty clear. My point was, look, good corporate governance is fundamental to reputation building.
Mm.
It's fundamental to your members, because, you know, you have laws in there for a reason, and, you know, we're all accountable to somebody else, and, you know, we are in the business of reputation building.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we struggle to get it right ourselves, then how can we then claim to be experts and advise other people?
Yes, I think that is, you know, I don't want to comment on this particular situation because I don't really know enough about it. But, you know, yeah, broadly speaking, it's an issue that I think, communications industry faces in many, many countries. But I'll be watching with interest, you know, as your battle perhaps takes on more twists and turns.
Look, my viewpoint and my philosophy is very simple. Communications and reputation is essentially what you do and not just what you say. And I think often in certain parts of the world, it seems to be the other way around. It's more about what you say, and then what you do is clouded. There's a lack of transparency.
Mm.
There's a lack of accountability.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of integrity. You know, it's doing the right thing, even when you are not being asked why. or when you don't have a light being shone on you, because when it does happen, you're able to turn around and say, throughout the whole process or throughout all I've done the right thing.
Yeah.
And for these reasons.
And I know I was a little unfair earlier on about American companies, but I think, for example, a company like P&G, you know, has demonstrated that kind of attitude time and again. So there are things that can be learned, I think, from the fact that many of these well-established companies have really been through it in terms of controversies and public scandals, in the way that sometimes companies in emerging markets haven't been tested in that way. And so therefore they are much more comfortable in just sort of hiding a little bit and not kind of bringing that level of transparency to everything they do.
You know, when you look at certain markets, what is happening when it comes to politics, when it's what's happening when it comes to this polarization in the public space. You know, I very much believe that brands need to take risks as to what they stand for. Be much clearer on their values as well.
Okay.
And you know, risk will lead to controversy. You know, you've got to be ready for that. You've got to be ready to say, this is what we believe in. This is our choice. You know, if you don't believe in the same, that is your choice, but this basically is who we are.
And even if that alienates customers, and you get analysts asking what's going on the quarterly call, because that's the risk, right, for a publicly listed company.
True. Well, look, we've seen it, the most recent example with Nike.
Sure. But Nike has a heritage.
They do.
Right? It's a bit different if you're a, let's just say a Walmart, right? Very dependent on rural communities in the south of America, for example. Hard for them, right? Harder for them.
It's an issue which companies and communicators within companies need to, well, they are going to struggle with, but they need to find an approach which they are ultimately personally comfortable with and the organization is comfortable with. If you look at, you know, what my company has done with the talk, for example, and there was always going to be
just great piece of work. That is a great example of taking a stand in that way, I think, and actually probably would have alienated people, but it was the right thing to do. So actually, that's a very good example.
And you've got other examples. You know, you mentioned Walmart, but there's the chain in Germany called Adecco, which did the activation essentially around removing all foreign-made products from their shelves for one day, and proving the point about xenophobia, about the fact that, you know, we're all global today. So brands need to, or communicators need to step up and think, look, what are we really about? It's not just simply about the product anymore, because pretty much everything is a commodity. You know, what are we about as an organization? What do we stand for? So when people think about us, this is a value set that comes to mind. And you know, it's not easy. You look at what's happening today with Google in China, Facebook. It's actually it's fascinating. Look at tech. Tech, you know, has this dichotomy. On the one hand, they're pushing for immigration to the U.S. They're all based in Silicon Valley. California is probably the most open, the most liberal society in, in the whole of the U.S. And at the same time, you look what's, you know, as I mentioned with Google and China, what's happening there.
Yeah.
Facebook, the issue of security and also data privacy, mining data, not giving people transparency or an explanation as to what's happening with their data. So this is just going to become more pressing for communicators going forward.
Yeah,
you know, as people ask them, as stakeholders say, that what are you all about?
Yeah,
and what does that mean to me?
I think it's an opportunity, though, as well, for community. I mean, for me, when I hear that, I actually think it's quite exciting for companies to be able to define what they stand for. It's exciting for the people that work there. No one wants to work for a company that just stands for nothing.
True.
You know, and to have that opportunity to shape that's got to be exciting from a communications perspective.
It's going to be very exciting because, again, look. people want to talk about values, they want to talk about emotions, they want to talk about development and change.
Mm.
You know, so this is something that we all have an interest in. You know, what are you doing for us? What are you doing for the local community? What are you doing for this group in society? You know, what are you doing on issues such as sustainability? You know, really doing? And how are you not just talking about it, but also as well, how are you proving it?
Mm.
And I think with the amount of focus and also the amount of scrutiny on these issues, it's an opportunity for communicators to again step in and prove their worth.
Yeah.
You know, with management and say, look, we need to be brave on this. Mm. We need to take a position which may alienate our stakeholders, but we need to do it for the long term.
Yeah, you saw Nigel Powell from Nike, the story recently in New York Times that they were actually going to drop Colin Kaepernick, but Nigel Powell, the chief communications officer, in quotes, went ballistic. Now, we talk so much and actually criticize comms people for just being absent, not being around when these terrible decisions are made. You know, United throw someone off the plane. Where was the comms person?
Yep.
You have to give Nigel Powell, for example, a lot of credit, you know, for actually doing exactly what, you know, we kind of ask comms heads to do. You know, it's still rare, I think, but
it is, you know, we often talk about speaking truth to power and, you know, all these noble concepts, but and I find that it's spoken more about in conferences than it's actually spoken about in offices.
Or perhaps in columns about trade associations.
Quite possibly.
So you're like equal, you're equal opportunity though when it comes to, because you wrote a column criticizing PRCA a couple of years ago. Now it's MEPRO. So I think it's, you know, what's next? Who's next on your crosshairs,
on
Alex?
On the hit list. You know, I wish, you know, we discussed this before we started recording, and somebody said, you know, people need to get more involved. And that is how I get involved. You know?
You are very involved. You're in every trade association.
everywhere, you know, having my views aired in public. But the industry is changing rapidly. You know, you look at the younger generation coming in, you know, people who really get digital, who get mobile, get how tech works. We're also trying to do more when it comes to creative, which I think is a part of the industry we don't talk about enough. So my hope is that more people raise their voice, more people have an opinion and speak it openly, because without that, we are not going to change in the way that I think would benefit the whole industry.
Okay.
So I am all for engagement. I am all for having hard conversations. And, you know, if anybody has an opinion, then share it.
Yeah.
And don't be defensive.
Well said. We better get back inside the conference. They'll be missing you, at least.
Look, you are Aaron. I'm just the guy who's coming over from Dubai, so I'll escort you in, Aaron. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
You're Alex of Arabia. Thank you very much.